for their hashtags.
A dissection of pop culture past
with Eric Dallinger
and Carlianna Billings.
Hello and welcome to the Before There Were Hashtags podcast. I am your host, Eric Dallinger, and I'm with the one and only Carlianna Billings.
What? Hey, hi, hello, it's your me and your Eric, and we're back again, baby.
We are.
That's right.
2021 is gone.
Goodbye. Don't know her. Good riddance.
And on the recording of this
see
first...
See you never.
See you never. And on the recording of this first episode, I have my glass of champagne.
Well, not really. Ring in the new year?
Not really. It's actually... But I don't know how it's pronounced, but Frisianet.
Oh, Frisianet.
Frisianet.
Oh, yes. Frisianet.
Is it Cava or Cava? Spanish?
I think it's Cava. It's from Spain.
From
if
Spain.
I understand correctly.
España.
España.
It's actually, I did a little bit of research on it a few years ago. But
so it was.
Prosecco is, of course, made in Italy, and it's made with like Italian grapes, and it's
Italia.
Made in steel tanks. Well, champagne is mostly made of Chardonnay, but other grapes as well. And it's made in the Champagne region. But it's like fermented in its bottle, and that's what like makes it sparkling. So they're actually made in very different ways, Prosecco to Champagne. So when people are like, Prosecco is just Italian champagne, like that's not true. But Cava is made the exact same way as champagne, just in Spain.
So it is just the Spanish version.
It really is.
Yeah.
The Spanish version of champagne.
Where like, whereas Prosecco, there's a bit of a different process.
Yeah.
It's made, I hear you.
You can find out if it's made like champagne. Most of them say like traditional method. Yeah, sparkling wine, traditional method is on the back, which means that it was made like a champagne. But generally speaking, I actually like Prosecco better.
I like Prosecco because it's also cheaper.
It is cheaper.
And like, if I'm going to be honest, at the end of the day, baby, it's all bubbly. Who cares?
Yeah, nobody needs to know once it's in its glass.
And no one's going to tell, baby. No one's going to be sipping your drink. Yeah. No, there's nothing I love more than a, like, bubbly rosé. Because I love color. I'm all for the color. A pink wine and a pink sparkling wine. Oh! Sign me up for my Barbie fantasy.
You know what I've noticed, too, in the LCBO? For those of you not in Ontario, LCBO is the control board of Ontario.
That's right. It's where we get the alcohol.
It's where we get the alcohol here in our country, in our province.
That's right.
Prosecco, champagne can be rosé, but Prosecco, generally speaking, can't. But Prosecco brands are starting to create rosés made like Prosecco and in the Prosecco regions. And before it always just said rosé, but now they are saying rosé Prosecco.
Oh.
So they've changed the rules a little bit because like wine labeling rules in Italy Europe is like really hardcore.
Staunch. Yeah.
It's
well,
really
it's like
staunch.
Cheese rules too. It's like a lot of the like traditional food stuffs all have very like strict rules around what can be called what and from where. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
For all our, that's our little food corner for all our food.
I know. Totally off topic. I was reading these like blogs on like when you do a podcast, make sure you get right into the topic. And I was like, oops, we don't do that. We love to talk for a good 10 minutes before about nothing.
Well, I mean, sometimes you need a little debrief. Sometimes you need a little, you know, in or a little something, a little spice.
Yeah.
Add a little bit of spice.
I always say people come here for the knowledge, but they stay for our personalities.
But probably true. Oh, well, we love y'all either way. But today, we have a very exciting theme
to kick off
2022. Boo-boo.
Well, I was inspired to pick this topic because I've been watching season 2 of the Netflix documentary Cheer. And where did, like, everybody's obsession with cheerleading start? It started with this movie that we're going to talk about today.
I mean, if you've read the description, you know what's what.
Yeah.
But if you don't, sit back, relax, buckle up, baby, while we jump into our time machine to go back to the way back.
Go back to the way back.
Ooh, ooh. And the way that we do that so that we can talk about our topic of the day is that we're going to take 5 minutes right now off the top-ish of the show, like we always do, to talk about what's going on in pop culture today, so that we can get that out of our system so we can dive in to yesteryear.
Yep. Here we go. 5 minutes on the clock, starting in 3, 2, 1. All right. Well, I mean, we've been following it all this time. The Britney Spears saga continues.
That's true.
So Jamie Lynn Spears, of course, went on to GMA and decided that she was going to promote her book. Yeah. And Britney was not having it. Britney wrote a very lengthy post on the Twitter calling Jamie Lynn, we should be clear, Jamie not her Lynn, father, yeah. Jamie, no, no. Her sister, Jamie Lynn,
author of this new book.
Saying, congratulations, I think the first line reads, congratulations, babe, you have stooped to a new low. She at one point calls her scum and that she is a liar.
It is so dramatic that I've been seeing it around Twitter where, like, actor friends and whatnot are are retweeting it and saying, this is, someone's going to do this as a monologue.
They should. It's,
like, that's how like, wild it is, how dramatic it is. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I guess, a piece of art.
It's like, a piece of art.
Really, it's really
I guess in the something. Book, Jamie claims at some point Britney held her in a room with a knife.
And yeah, I think that was, yeah, what Britney had the most issue with.
And in the post, Britney's like, the only time I've ever been with a knife with you is when I couldn't cut a squash and I had to ask you to cut it for me. You are a lying piece of scum. It is dramatic.
Yeah, well, because I think she's thinking that, like, Jamie Lynn is taking advantage of the opportunity, and, like, she totally is. So it's hard to know, like, where truth lies with this duo. I mean, it's easy for us to agree and believe Britney.
Oh, it's very easy for us all to agree with Britney. Right? Because we love Brit.
Because we love Brit, and she's been done wrong so often and for so long. So it's, like, weird to, like, it's going to be weird when people read this book and see what happens with it. It's just going to land in a weird place, I think.
Yeah. I've been watching some videos and some stuff on it and basically being, like, what I've kind of learned, and I'm taking somebody's ideas right now and I'm not giving them credit because I forget where I came from. I'm such a great podcaster, right?
Ah, the melting pot that is everyone's brains.
Yes, exactly. That there's just, like, a lot of family trauma in that group, of individuals, and that they've kind of triangulated the family. So, like, there's sort of, like, a separate trio of Britney and her parents and Jamie Lynn and her parents, who are the same people, but it's, like, two triangles, and they both feel very hurt by their parents, and they
for different reasons. Yeah.
And that Britney, because she was, like, the child star and she was sort of away from the home a lot, became, like, the scapegoat for that and was like, oh, we can put a lot of the blame on her because she's not here. And then when she was
for
having,
like, messing with the family dynamic or whatever, and then so that there's a lot of tension between the sisters because of that. Yeah, you're right. That they both have issues with their parents that are separate from one another. And sometimes in families, like, things like that can bring siblings closer together. And sometimes in families, it can, you know, make the gap even wider. And I think for them, there's been times in their lives where it's been a bit of both, where it's brought them closer and where it's pushed them further away. And I think this book is seeming now that it's a real issue. Which is really sad.
It is sad.
And I bet it's really hard. And I bet there's lots of feelings.
Yeah, well, they seemed very close. Like, at one point, Jamie Lynn's daughter, was so close to Britney that, like, Britney almost embraced her as her daughter. Like, it was...
Yeah.
She would thank her sons and her niece in all of her, like, acceptance speeches. Like, they were that close. So I don't really know what's happened It's so confusing. Yeah. I just want Brittany to do an Oprah interview. Please do an Oprah interview. Like a Meghan Markle.
We just want to see, yeah, Meghan Markle style, lay it all out there interview.
Lay it all out there. Oh, yeah. It's all we want.
I mean, that would be, it would be like unpacking years. And we're talking like a lifetime of unpacking that would have to, you know, to touch on all of this, I think. It's very, very interesting.
And before our time runs out, just, we've got to mention Betty White.
Oh my R.I.P. God, we have to mention Betty White. We have to mention Sidney Poitier. Bob Saget. They go in threes, baby. And that is a big three. Those are some big
That is a big three.
That's a big three.
You know, though, at least in terms of Betty White, you know you lived a good life when you die at 99 and people think you still deserved more time.
I know. And we're recording this on the day that would have been her 100th birthday.
Yes. So
happy birthday, Betty White.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
With my sparkling wine.
In my water. Sidney Poitier is one of my favorite performers, one of my favorite actors. He's in my aunt's favorite movie, one of her favorite movies, the other being West Side Story. But one of her favorite movies, To Sir With Love. And so I grew up watching that movie and like loving Sidney Poitier. I think he's like... So he was just so handsome and so clever and so bright and such a trailblazer.
Yes, exactly. All those things.
All those things. And then Bob Saget, like, beloved comedian.
We have
shockingly
to...
gone, you know?
Yeah, so. We do also have to cover Full House at one point because there's a Bob Saget story. There's a couple of Bob Saget stories that need to be covered on this pod. But yes, Full House. He was in, not to take it away from Tom Hanks, but in some ways he was also America's dad.
Oh, he's, he was absolutely America's dad. And also, like, a very gifted comedian. Like,
yes.
Like, really excellent at stepping out of that as well. And, like, very, he had a lot of, like, dark humor. He was really good at, you know, using humor as a coping mechanism like we like to. And he, yeah, he's just a really funny guy. And, but what a loss to comedy as well.
Truly.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
three titans.
Three titans.
But it's been a January so far. That's for sure. It's been a bit of a wild ride.
It truly has. Well, that was a little bit over 5 minutes, but that's okay. You know,
but that's okay because I'm ready to bring it on, Eric.
We're ready to bring it on.
Oh, why don't you bring on the topic?
What's that? It's getting a little cold in here. Like a little brr. It's cold in here.
It's cold in here.
There must be some clovers in the atmosphere.
Oh, I said burr.
It's cold in here. Oh, my goodness.
We are, of course, here to discuss today the one, the only, Bring It On. We're bringing it on today.
What a great movie.
What
I loved
it. What an interesting time. See, my connection to the Bring It On franchise, though I've seen them all, the one that I've seen the most is Bring It On All or Nothing.
Oh, that's a lot of people of our generation. The third movie. We'll get into the third movie a little bit.
We'll get into it. But for me, yeah, I stepped in around like movie three and was like, oh, this. Which is weird.
I saw the first one when I was really young and I didn't remember it. And then I was like, I saw it in like the Blockbuster. Turns out I brought home Bring It On again, which is the sequel. The second one or the first sequel. And I was like, this isn't the movie I remembered. And then I found the original and was like, oh, this is 1,000 times better.
That's so funny. I did that once with the movies The Swan Princess. I brought home the fourth movie thinking it was the first movie. But I didn't do that with Bring It On. Though I do distinctly remember renting the third movie, Bring It On All or Nothing, and being like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. Let's watch all of them.
Yes.
But yeah, so let's go back to where it all started, Eric.
Beep, 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 beep. All right. So, Bring It On is a 2000s American teen cheerleading comedy film directed by Peyton Reed and written by Jessica
Bendinger.
I should be able to say that. It sounds like my last name, but I can't read.
It's kind of similar to your last name.
Bendinger. Yeah, and the film, of course, stars Kirsten Dunst in the titular role of Torrance Shipman, Eliza Dushku, Jesse Bradford, And the queen herself, Gabrielle Union.
The one, the only Gabrielle Union.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's the first of the Bring It On film series. And it was followed by a heck ton more, which we'll get into in a bit.
Yeah, it was produced by Beacon Pictures and distributed by Universal Pictures in the United States and Canada, and internationally by, I can never pronounce it, but Bienio Vista International, which is Disney.
Buena Vista. The Disney equivalent for the adult content.
Which is hilarious that it's like a Universal pick. To me, it's so Universal. I'm like, I always remember like The Big Planet, but it's crazy, or it's interesting to see that it was Disney.
Distributed
in international markets. I don't always understand the film industry and distribution versus production.
I mean, that's why we're the talent, baby.
That's why we're the talent. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So of course, this film is about cheerleader Torrance Shipman in her senior year at Rancho Cornos High School, which roughly translates to Beef Meat High School in Spanish.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I remember watching the DVD extras and being like, we chose it because it looked good. We know it makes no sense.
They're like, we don't care about language. No one's going to care. And you know what? The problem is
Beef Farm High School.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, Rancho Carne High School. Carne is meat. Rancho is a ranch, like a farm. So, Beef Farm High.
It follows her life as she becomes captain of the cheerleading squad and learns out that their previous captain, Big Red, stole all her routines from an inner city school called the East Compton Clovers.
Yep.
And it's about their journey to nationals and how they got there and how they compete with the Clovers and how they try to make things right, or in some ways they don't.
Lots of ways they don't. It's a classic. What more is there to say? It's a dance movie that's not a dance movie because it's cheerleading. So it's like, this comes out at around a time where like dance movies were huge. Like, I remember
Center Stage. Save the Last Dance.
Like, literally, there's so, so very many that like there was this pocket of time where that was a really big focus. These like almost coming of age but not quite dance movies.
And it kind of also mixes also with like sports movies that have always been popular. Remember the Titans, Rudy.
Bend It Like Beckham.
It's like a great mix of those where it's like performing arts mixed with sports. And that's sort of like cheerleading is that like great sort of divide or sort of cross intersection of sport and performing arts.
Totally. It's that real meeting of the two. And it's also like, it's also a time of like girl power movies. So this also brings all of that into it as well.
So the movie came around in the mid to late 90s when Jessica Bendinger, she actually wanted to create a documentary for MTV about cheer. And so she brought it to the executives at MTV and they were like, we're not really interested in this. It's not what we're really about. And she went, okay, cool. So if I'm not going to be able to make a documentary, I'll just write a screenplay. So then she does. And she would eventually bring it to the studios and it would get picked up by, as I said, Beacon Pictures, and they would produce it. And little fun fact, one of the people that helped her bring it to the studios was Tom Hanks, who we previously talked about.
We just said America's Dad.
America's Dad helped bring it on to the pictures. Now, he really brought it on. I don't really know exactly his involvement. I just read it on a few, like, 15 facts about Bring It On, and they were like, Tom Hanks helped
was involved.
Bendinger bring the script to different studios. So, I don't know. He believed in it.
Love him. Oh, he believed in it before any of us knew that we could. Mm-hmm. What a gift. So, Bring It On was produced by Mark Abraham and Thomas Bliss. It was the debut film of director Peyton Reed. And kind of like we mentioned about the, like, girl poweriness and, like, badassery, the film pushes the sex aspects of cheerleading, and I'm reading verbatim from the Wikipedia page.
Don't worry, put it that way. We all do it.
Without losing a PG-13 rating. So it was still,
Well, this was cool. At the time of American Pie and all those movies were coming out. So they wanted to capture that nature, but bring it to an age group that it was more appropriate for. So they didn't want it to be an R or 14A. They wanted it to be a PG-13. So they really tried to dial it back. I even remember I was shocked about this watching it. So I watched like the commentary on the DVD and he drops the F-bomb in it because he was like, we get one F-bomb drop for rated PG-13.
They do.
So I'm using it now because they don't use it in the film. Like they,
that's so funny.
They raise the finger a lot in the film, but they don't actually ever say it.
Say it. Yeah. Because you're for something I learned actually, I think this week. For, like, a PG-13 rating, you're allowed to drop an F-bomb without it being in, like, a sexual connotation. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can use it as an expletive once, and you can still have a PG-13 rating, which I'm obsessed with. I think that's so funny and interesting. And so, yeah, they, like, dumbed it down a bit. They, like, kept some of the raunchiness, but made it, like, clean enough for, like, a PG-13 rating, which I think is great.
Also, this movie was so ahead of its time because really at its core, it's about feminism, it's about race and class divisions and cultural appropriation. It has so much going for it. And then at the same time, it's so of its time because the amount of slurs they use in this movie, the gay slurs are just rampant.
I know, it's the time. Well, that's the thing. It's like, does its best to be this like intersectionally woke piece, but at the same time, it's not really doing much to like really make a difference, but it's like trying and it's very of its time where it was kind of pushing the envelope and being like, look at this thing, we're doing a thing and that's great. But like, yeah, by today's standards, it's like,
it's like very ahead of its time in its message about race and what it's trying to do. And then it also has like moments where you're like, oh, that is a 2000s piece of work.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's both like looking to the future, but also a time capsule at the same time.
Like, for example, it has a positive portrayal of a gay character, a character that is queer. And yet he gets called fag, I think, many, many times in the film. And But at the same time, it's positive because he's accepted by his friend group. He has friends. He shows that you can live a queer life and have friends. Yeah. And he doesn't have a love interest, but they do have a moment where he like flirts with a guy at the Nationals. And so it doesn't shy away from the fact that this character is queer. He's not like just ambiguously without a partner the whole time.
Yeah.
And it also has, but at the same time, the amount of times they use the word dyke is unbelievable. Yeah. It's Courtney and Whitney. Courtney and Whitney, like, drop that word.
All the time.
All the time throughout the whole film.
See, I haven't revisited it because I just know that it's not going to hold up, especially in the language, I think. But it's just, like, it is very of its time. I mean, we have to remember this is the year 2000 exactly. Like, it's the peak of those kinds of like use of language, like words that are absolutely slurs or like have been reclaimed by various, you know, groups as, you know, not slurs. But yeah, like the butt of the joke is, "Oh, don't, that's so gay." You know, like that is the comedy culture of that time.
Yeah, like there's a scene where I think it's Jan. The male characters are Jan and Les, which is funny because it's my mom's name and my aunt's name.
That's funny.
Where it's the straight character. He's like pressing on the girl's leg, like stretching. It's like all consensual and good. But then the two footballers come by and they're like, maybe we should join the squad. And the other one's like, dude, like it's like. The joke is like, no matter how much action I say with quotations.
Quote unquote, how close you can get to the girls.
It's still a gay sport. And
But
I feel like we're saying the negatives before the positives. You know,
sure.
It really is a film that breaks down sort of very simply about what cultural appropriation is in the 2000s before we were really having topics about this.
Yeah, there wasn't widespread language around Like, we wouldn't have used the words cultural appropriation if we were making this podcast in 2000 about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And has, like, a very honest portrayal of, you know, sort of the white narrative around that, you know, because at mm-hmm. first it's more about, it's not so much about taking accountability at first for Torrance. It's totally. More about, like, how it affects her. It's not about how it affects the Clovers at first. And she yeah. gets sort of... her team.
Yeah, it's like how she looks and how mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
Her team kind of twists her arm into like not changing the routines, but she eventually learns that within she has to come up with her own ideas and her she has to win on her own in order to prove to herself that she is the best cheerleader that she can be. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not explaining it amazingly, but
no, you're there, doing great. You're
there
doing
is great. This idea in it too, like the black. Girls, they're so creative and they're so great and they're just disenfranchised, so they don't get the opportunity. And the best moment is when, not the best moment, but Torrance like gets money from her dad to give to them, and Gabrielle Union rips up the check in her face and it's like, "We don't She's need so you. What badass. Is this guilt money? No,
yeah, it's very is this white hush savior. Money.
No, yeah. it's guilt money," and like throws it back in her yes. face, and it's brilliant. And it shows that they didn't need a white savior. To get mm-hmm. them out, they end up getting help from Paula Patton, who is sort of an yes. Oprah-like talk show host who gives them the money to go to Florida, to Nationals.
Right.
But it's like great because Paula in the film is from their neighborhood. She's somebody that got out. She's somebody that has made, she's a black woman and she's from their neighborhood. She understands their struggle. So it's black people helping black people rather than like a white savior narrative,
yeah.
which
yeah.
it would have been so really easy at job. The time.
It could have been so easy to be like, "We're gonna help you. Here you go." Mm-hmm. No, it does do a really good job of empowerment. Like I remember watching it as a kid. Yeah, the maybe negative, more negative things we've said so far about it didn't even cross my mind. I just saw these like badass girls, you know, doing it for themselves and like these like. Underdogs, though it does like rely on the actors of color, the black actors, to be mostly the like underdog disenfranchised mm-hmm. folks,
and they are viewed in some ways as the antagonists in the film.
Yes,
they're not yeah. evil. It's not an evil antagonist, but they
no,
are
but
against,
they're framed that way.
They are yeah, against
the rivals,
the protagonist,
correct. And so it's interesting that like today I would love to see it not like I would love to see it flipped. To me that would be interesting, but of the time it does do a really good job of, mm-hmm. of still subverting, you know, what could have gone pretty white savior to less than that, which is
yeah
you know, wonderful. It speaks really highly to the
I watched a TikTok. I've actually seen a few TikToks on this movie recently and once again, like not giving credit where credit is due.
It's vintage now, Eric.
But
it's
vintage.
22 years old.
Once again, not giving credit where credit is due because it's TikTok, so the names fly
streams
across
right
my
past.
It streams yeah. right past, but I'm owning the fact that it's not fully my idea. It's not one. It's 100% not my idea.
Love
but
it.
Just in the spirit of this movie, I have to make sure I give credit where credit is due because
yes.
that's what this movie is largely about: giving credit where credit is due.
Plot.
Yes. As I steal ideas from everybody, from black TikTok creators. Not that I'm making jokes about that. You shouldn't do it. But
no, absolutely not. But that is that's funny.
That in a 2022 lens, the problem with this movie is that it is still from the white people's perspective.
Exactly.
That
yeah.
it's cultural appropriation from a white person's perspective. And at yeah. the end of the day, because the black people win, it says to white audiences in today's culture, oh, they still did it better than us, so we should have still stolen their ideas. So
yeah.
that's like the problem mm-hmm. through a 2022 lens, but when you look at it through a 2000s lens, you're like,
yeah.
no, like, it makes sense. Like, it proves that they were always the best and that
yes.
their stolen ideas, they finally got credit for their stolen ideas. And,
yeah.
but it also shows that, like, the Toros, they were always great and they will continue to be great because
yeah, on their
and
own
now they
merit.
Founded
yeah.
their, now they found their own voice.
Totally. Yeah. It is an interesting like microcosm of a macrocosm of like white people stealing black people's ideas and, you know, doing well with them and claiming them as their own. Because
I mean,
is historically
it really is,
a problem and it, still is a problem.
Yeah. But, it really is shown so perfectly in the Burr It's Cold in Here cheer because they had two separate choreographers for the two pieces, but it's the same cheer. And what they did is they created the Clover's version first because it's like the full-on version.
Yeah,
and
the
then
OG.
The other choreographer came and watched and created a watered-down, more white palatable version for the Toros to do. And that's like the whole point is like that white artists, not all the time, but white artists take black art or art from other cultures and water it down and make it more palatable for white audiences, because generally speaking, white audiences are their demographic that they are selling art to.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That's interesting, though, that you wanted to jump into choreography, because I want to pivot a little out of this, which I think is a wonderful conversation, but I want to pivot into a little about the background of the, you know, of the cheer in the movie, because I think that's really important and integral. So prior to auditioning to the film, all the actors were expected to have a cheer prepared. And so they didn't want to use stunt doubles for this movie, basically. So
no, they
required...
only... Yeah, I do know one use of stunt double in the movie.
Okay, we'll tell us right now.
Oh,
you can tell us now. Yeah.
So in the audition scene, they, and this is something that's interesting. And if you watch the movie again, you'll notice this. when Missy does, or Eliza Dushku does all the back handsprings, like round off step, cartwheel, round off step, round off cartwheel, back handspring, step out, round off cartwheel, back handspring, step out, cartwheel, round off, back handspring, full twisted layout, I believe is what it
oh
is.
My
it's
God.
Roughly like that.
Yes, full twisted layout.
Full
oh my
twisted
God, that's
layout.
Right. Layout.
You can tell that when she jumps and then she comes back up, it's two different people because they land in slightly different spots. But what's also interesting is that they say that she's like a gymnast. And then when you watch any of the routines, she does gymnastics. She's just doing like choreography and dance and stunts, which is amazing. And I get it because she's an actress.
But not any of the gymnastic tricks that you, if you're a gymnast, you'd be doing.
But
not
why
none
would...
of the tumbling, yeah.
I think they should have made her, instead of a gymnast, a dancer. Like, I am like a modern neoclassical dancer, like a darker sort of like I'm an artist, and then that way they wouldn't have to deal with, when you're actually watching the choreography, you're not watching her do any gymnastics.
I think they probably just weren't thinking that deeply about it.
No. I mean, that's just me watching it for 20 years.
That's right.
Being like,
being
I
like,
notice Eliza Dushku doesn't even do a cartwheel in the whole movie.
That's so funny. Well, they required all the actors to participate in a 4-week cheerleading camp. So even if they didn't, you know, have much experience cheering, then they had to do some cheer. And I'm qualified to speak on this movie because I was a cheerleader in high school. I just want to put that on there.
You were.
I was.
Give us a cheer, Carly. Give us a cheer.
No, absolutely not. I hung up my palms that I never got many years ago. No, I signed up for the cheerleading team because a friend dragged me to it. And I was like, yeah, I could do it. Like, I danced. I, like, did all, you know, theatrics of it all. I was like, I could do cheer. That'd be fun. And then I joined the team. We were both on the team. She was on the team for, like, less than a month. And then I stayed on the team for the rest of the year.
Yeah, because you are not a quitter.
I'm not a quitter. And also, if I quit, the girl who was our captain would have probably eaten me alive. She was one of my friends. I also didn't want to let her down.
If I find this picture, can I post it on the Instagram of you as a cheerleader?
Yeah, there's definitely pictures on my Facebook.
I'm going to find them.
Yeah, but don't, okay, so don't judge me. I was the kid that went to a school that didn't care about cheerleading, so we didn't, I sold so many chocolate almonds with the promise that we would eventually get our uniforms and so we could perform at Canada's Wonderland like all the other good cheerleading teams. We never did that. I never got palms. I only joined because my friend begged me to and I wanted a cute outfit. I never got the cute outfit. That is the travesty that will forever sit with me. But I did end up getting, with all the money we raised from the chocolate almonds that we sold for months, like an Adidas zip up.
Yeah, you did.
It's cheerleading on the back. So I was a cheerleader once upon a time. I did herkies. I can't jump. But this girl, she got off the floor and did some herkies. I had a
Monica from cheer would be so proud. You are a Navarro girl.
Oh my God, it's me. No, but I was in the front for a lot of the dances. I also wasn't tumbling. I was always the bass. I was a bass. This is not a girl who flies, okay? So I am very qualified to speak on cheerleading from my 1 year of cheer. But cheer is fun. Cheer's
yeah,
so cool.
Cheer is fun. I never officially did it, but I always wanted to, but my dance schedule wouldn't allow me. I wish my studio offered cheer.
Oh, that would be
because
really
some studios
cool.
do offer cheer. I would have loved yeah. that. I would have done it.
Well, cheerleading is really huge in the States.
Yeah.
Where it's not as big where we live here in Canada. I don't know why. But, I mean, of course, like,
well,
everything.
Football
really
culture
dedicated...
isn't as big here.
Football culture is not as big. That's true.
There's no cheerleaders in hockey.
That's right. On the ice. Though I did, before in Hamilton, where the Tiger Cats play is Tim Hortons Field. Before it was Tim Hortons Field, it was Ivor Wynne.
Yes.
Our... For the opening game of that season that I was a cheerleader, I got to cheer on the field that I ever went. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
I have that. Yeah. So we were wearing like leggings and a long shirt. And oh my God, we all had the same shoes. Eric bought the shoes were from Walmart. So we were on a real cheer team, but we weren't. You know what I mean? So.
You're trying.
This is me trying, in the words of Taylor Swift. But back to Bring It On. James Franco and Jason Schwartzman both auditioned for the role of Cliff.
Yeah.
Did you know that? That's so cool.
I did know that. That is cool.
That's so cool.
Cliff, what's his name? What's the actor's name? Jesse Bradford. He, yes. to me, gives me such, like, Penn Badgley vibes.
He does give very Penn Badgley vibes. But I think that was, like, the leading man that the early 2000s was asking.
Yeah, very alternative.
Like, very, the alternative, like, a little moody.
Yeah. Just speaking to, sorry, going back to, like, the great things about this movie and its messaging, is very feminist in a way, because all the women are in leadership positions. They have a female captain, two female captains, I should say.
Yeah.
It is a female-led comedy. There's very few male characters in the story. The romance is secondary to that of the cheerleading plot.
Yeah, it's like a B storyline.
And so, even though, good. Like, Courtney and Whitney are technically kind of like the Mean Girls characters, they are very upfront and honest about who they are the whole movie. Like, they don't do a lot of backstabbing to Torrance. Like, they're not going behind her back. They're not talking.
Yeah.
They're not two-faced. They're very honest about who they are right up front. And that was once again an idea stolen from The Take, a YouTube channel. So go look them up.
And yeah, it's got like Mean Girl vibes, but not Mean Girl antics.
Yes.
Which is great. And it's, you know, a different flavor.
Mm-hmm. And then also what this movie does is it diversifies the cheerleading stereotype. So they play into it in some ways. But the cheerleader has, where the jock has always been relegated to this idea that the jock can be the bully, but the jock can also be the hero of the story. Like, there's a lot of diversity in who the jock is around media, where the cheerleader has never gotten that until now. Like, the cheerleader has always been the mean girl. She's always been sort of used as the prop to the jock to eventually kind of get rid of and set aside in his to further his story.
Yeah, she also always looks like a very certain way. She's very like Sandra Dee in Grease. She's blonde, she's bubbly, she's skinny, she's white, you know?
And what this movie does that's so brilliant is it doesn't fully negate that. It doesn't say, no, it's not this. It just says she can be that, but she can also be all of this as well. It doesn't say that there's anything wrong with what she was, but says that, no, she's just bigger than that. She can be more things.
Yeah. She's every woman.
She doesn't... This movie doesn't
or person.
Yeah, this movie doesn't take down the cheerleader to build the cheerleader back up. It uses everything that she has and builds upon it. And I think that really is brilliant. You know, the cheerleader can be a black woman. The cheerleader can be an Asian woman, because there's... Whitney, of course, is Asian in the story. And the cheerleader can be rich. The cheerleader can be poor. The cheerleader can have agency. The cheerleader can fail. The cheerleader can make mistakes. Cheerleader can do the right thing. The cheerleader can do the wrong thing. There's just so much that she can be. She's not a two-dimensional character like she's often portrayed in most media.
Absolutely.
And there is a change after this with, you see in Glee, the cheerleaders are very diversified and there is a lot more to them. And I would say that that is largely because of this story and this movie.
Totally.
This movie was also a hit. It made
$11 million.
It was made for $11 million And its box office was $90.5 million. So that's a pretty...
That's right.
It made back its money. It did well.
Oh, yeah. Like, big time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk about the cast a little bit? I know we briefly mentioned some of them, but...
Yeah, let's do it. Why not?
So in the leading role was Kirsten Dunst, who has become... Queen. She's a household name by...
She's in
standards.
Everything.
She's in
who doesn't
everything.
Love her?
She is the original Mary Jane.
Yes. She's everything.
She is Marie Antoinette.
She is Marie Antoinette. She's in the movie Bachelorette, which is one of my favorites. If you don't, if you liked Bridesmaids but like a bit of darker humor, that's an excellent movie. She is, she's a child actor. She is in
Interview with a Vampire.
Interview with a Vampire. She is also in one of my favorite TV shows that sadly was canned because of the Panorama, which is
Becoming a God
in Central Florida.
Yeah.
She was so good in that. There's nothing she can't do. I'm truly convinced of that.
Mm-hmm. Missy Pantone was played by the one and only Eliza Dushku.
Iconic.
She's been in a lot. Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. She was also in Bull for a while until actually she got fired for... this was like a big story. She accused the leading actor of sexual misconduct and got fired from the show. So, yeah, but Eliza Dushku has been in a lot.
She got fired for it?
Yeah, she got fired for it.
That's awful.
There is also, she's also the girl in Blink-182's I'm Just a Kid music video.
I'm just a kid.
Life is a nightmare.
I'm just a kid. I know that it's not fair. So good.
Gabrielle Union is, of course, Isis. And, like, do we... Once again, also fired from America's Got Talent for raising issues about race. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
Dang.
But, sorry, I should also say that, like, Gabrielle Union is iconic. She's in movies such as She's All That, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh my God, yes. She's so good.
She's in that show with Jessica Alba right now.
That's
she's
right.
in a lot. She's iconic. You know who Gabrielle Union is. She's been in a lot of shows.
I mean, we didn't jump into really explaining her much like we did Kirsten Dunst. We also didn't explain Kirsten Dunst because we just know you know who they are.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's hard to... Yeah. You know. We know.
Fun fact, Nicole Bilderbach, who would play Whitney, would eventually go on to play... Julie Kim in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That is right.
And then there was also the Three Clovers, which were played by Natalie Reed as Janelope. I love that name.
It's so funny.
It's so good. Brandy so Williams funny. As LaFred. Shamira Fears as Lava. And they were members, actually, of a group called Black, and they were a sort of a trio, TLC. They were actually started by... Left Eye from TLC.
Yes. That's
and true. they became a group called Black, and they sang sort of the main theme of Bring It On, which was As If on the soundtrack. As if I'm ever gonna take you back, as if.
Oh, right.
Yeah. You know what I think is That's interesting? Right. This is just my perspective, but watching this film, it sounds like those roles were supposed to be two roles, because if you notice, only ever two of them talk in a scene at once. And then they were like, but we've got this group of three women that we would like to put in the movie. We'll just write a new character and just give her some of the lines of the other characters.
Yeah, we'll just add her in and, like, make it work.
That is not canon. Like, I don't actually know that. That is just
No, a theory. That's just the vibe you get. Yeah,
it's I feel like Janelope, Natalie Reed as Janelope, is, like, she's very iconic. She has, like, a lot of lines. So
That's
I feel
true.
Like she Janelope was always a character, and they split Lava and LaFred into two characters out of one.
I mean, that wouldn't be surprising.
Also, here's like a little thing. You look at they'll always post this one picture of Bring It On, and it's when they go to the football game, when the Clovers go to the football game to like cuss out the Toros.
Yeah.
And there's the four girls. The one girl is not one of the three. Like, I don't think LaFred is there. I don't think Brandy Williams is in the scene. Like, maybe I don't recognize her. Maybe they just made her up differently, but I don't think it's her.
You're probably right.
I don't know why. Maybe she wasn't available that day to shoot. So they just got one of the other girls that was on the Clover squad. And they were like, here, you get a little special part.
Yeah, maybe. I could see that. I could see that.
I have a few different theories about this movie and different things. Oh, do you want to know something that's also really cute and really fun? So what? Claire Kramer, who played Courtney, and Nicole Bilderbach, who played Whitney, were such good friends that they became such great friends on the set that when Claire got married, Nicole was her maid of honor.
Oh my god, that's so cute.
When you watch the two mean girls in this movie, know that they really are best friends.
Oh, I love that. There really is nothing more I love than that.
Also, little fun fact that when Janelle P says, oh, let me beat these Buffys down, that is a reference because Eliza Dushku was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's right.
And actually, Claire Kramer was also on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So it's like making a reference to the fact that two members of the Toros team were Buffy the Vampire Slayer alums.
That's pretty funny.
What other fun facts did I learn? Oh, there's just so many.
Ooh.
Oh, there's like a cameo as a mime, and that is Peyton Reed, who directed the movie.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Lindsay Sloan plays Big Red, and she's in Horrible Bosses, and she's been in a lot. That.
That's true.
Yeah.
You'd recognize her. Yeah, it was like, I mean, it's really interesting to see how many names are attached to this now, looking back. But it's also like, it was so successful.
Oh, yeah.
So successful. I mean, it wasn't like critically acclaimed because, mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about critics is they almost never make room to, you know, in their hearts for stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like, they just don't, you know, like.
Yeah.
Teen girls are always undervalued and always underappreciated by, you know, critics mm-hmm. and whatnot, because they don't see it as, you know, important or for them or whatever. I don't know. But it was so successful, Eric, that it spawned 5 direct-to-video sequels and 1 upcoming Halloween-themed television film, which is wild, and a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
So, after Bring It On in 2000 came in 2004, Bring It On Again.
Which shares none of the same directing team and none of the same writing team. However, right. It does share the same producing team.
Yeah. And also there's no recurring cast members or, you know, real references to the
previous film. But this is my conspiracy theory.
Okay, come on, conspiracy theory.
Here we go. Bring It On Again. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Replace the two main characters with Kirsten Dunst and Gabrielle Union. It's a direct sequel.
Okay.
It's a direct sequel. They go to the same college together and they join a cheer team. Even take the love interest, get rid of the point that Torrance just met him, or the character is named Whittier in the sequel, but take away that point that they just met, make it that like he just was getting like food, and then when he meets them and like defends her against like the big football guy.
Right.
If you get rid of the fact that they just met, it works that could be Cliff. Like, they could all three of them go to the same university. It could be a direct sequel. It really could.
Well, then maybe it was originally written as a direct sequel.
And that is my theory.
Altered. That's very possible.
That is literally my theory, is that it was written to be a direct sequel and they couldn't get the actors, or they didn't have the money and they were like, it's going to be a direct to video sequel.
Video.
And they're like, okay, well, we're not going to be able to get Kirsten Dunst for this. She's in Spider-Man.
She's a big name now. You know what I admire, though, then, if that is the case, though this is a conspiracy theory moment, I admire that they didn't just try to refill the roles and name them the same things and just, you know, cast other girls that were similar-ish, you know, to the originals. They at least tried a little to alter it, if that is the case. Which I like, because I there's nothing I dislike more than, like, something that's just like, it's the same and it's fine. We think you're stupid.
Like Daddy Daycare, when it's Eddie Murphy in the first movie and Cuba Gooding Jr. in the second movie.
Yes. I've never seen the second one because Daddy Daycare is a masterpiece, if you ask me. That's another movie we should do one day, because
we should.
One of my favorites. Truly one of my favorite movies. Which sounds hilarious, but it's great.
In 2006 came everybody's favorite.
everyone's favorite.
Bring it on, All or Nothing. Starring
Bring it on, All or Nothing.
Starring one and only Hayden Panettiere and the amazing Solange Smith Knowles, Beyonce's sister.
Right. Yes. It was the one for me. Mm-hmm. It was, released direct to DVD August 8th, 2006.
And it was written, once again, shared no writers with the original Bring It On or writers with Bring It On Again. Had a different producing team, different director, but it was written by Alison Fauss. I think that I'm pronouncing it right. And she would eventually go to write, or at least be on the writing teams for every Bring It On afterwards. I don't know about the new Halloween themed Bring It On or Die. Or Cheer or Die, I should say. Cheer, I don't know about that, but she does write. She's on the writing team for every movie after this. So there is some continuation from the third movie on in terms of the creative team.
Love it. Yeah, it's this movie is really funny to me. It does a lot more. I mean, they all kind of do this where it's they deal with a lot of the same issues.
Yeah, social issues.
Social issues, yeah, between the, you know, cheer teams and whatnot. Yeah, Hayden Panettiere is the rich girl. She ends up having to go to a different school when her father loses his job, and they relocate. She ends up in an inner city school, which was the very first time I ever saw anyone in a TV show or anything have to walk through like a metal detector to go to school. That like stuck with me. I was like, these poor kids are going through metal detectors to go to just high school. I was like, what in the world? Yeah.
My favorite moment of this movie is when she dedicates that she will never be a cheerleader again. She vows she will never be a cheerleader again. Right. And then they bury her pom-poms and go, ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Dust to dust.
Now you're not a cheerleader. That must really suck.
So good.
I laughed so hard.
I forgot how melodramatic this movie is. It's really funny.
Also, the dance scenes in this movie are hilarious when Hayden Panettiere has to crump when she gets up to the guy.
It's
and just
so upsetting.
Oh no, the guy comes up to her and he is like chest. It's so funny watching her crump. It is the
totally.
Oh, she's so good. She's so funny.
Yeah, she's so
and by good.
Rihanna, good,
I mean
Rihanna's
she's so
in
bad.
This?
Rihanna's
oh, she's
in it.
So bad. Rihanna's in this, which I think is the most important thing to bring up as well. This was also the first time I ever saw crumping, which I thought was really cool and fun. As like a white kid growing up in the white-ish kid growing up in the suburbs, I was like, crumping, show me more. But Rihanna's in it. It's like a magical thing. It's so good. There's like a competition and blah blah blah. It all ends up fine. Rihanna does Ponda Replay at the very end.
It's weird.
It's iconic. It's really weird.
It's weird because Ponda Replay had been out for a few years at this point.
Yes. Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah, like the whole thing is Hayden Panettiere wins with her new squad, and they're like, "What?" Against her old squad, and her old squad's like, "What?"
And this had the iconic introduction, like, hey, Carly. Hey, what? Introduce yourself. No way. Introduce yourself.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. My name is Eric and I say hi.
I say hi.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Back it up and meet my friend. And then Shabuya. Shabuya. Roll call.
Shabuya. Shabuya. Roll call. My name is Carly.
What?
Yeah, I like to dance. And when I dance, I don't wear pants.
Yeah.
Wah!
I don't even think she rhymes in the movie. There's like one point she's like,
I know.
And when I shake it, it's like an
earthquake. That is the best. Yeah. And I remember, grade 6 me being like, it's like an earthquake. I'm like, girl, I really thought I was giving. But that's what this movie can do. It empowers you to think that you are giving, even if you're a little grade 6,
mm-hmm.
not giving in any way, shape, or form.
And then 1 year later came Bring It On, In It to Win It.
In It to Win It, which I definitely never saw.
Starring Ashley Benson from Pretty Little Liars.
That's right.
And this movie takes inspiration from Cheer Camp.
Mm.
They go to, and it's about West Side Story.
It is literally
Rumble. They have a full Rumble.
That's right.
And then half the squad breaks their legs and they can't be in it. So they join forces.
So drama.
And
so good.
One member, Ashley Benson's character, falls in love with one of the She's a jet, and she falls in love with one of the members of the Sharks. Yes, the teams are Sharks and Jets.
It's literally West Side Story, but cheerleading.
Yeah, legit.
So good.
2 years after that would come Bring It On, Fight to the Finish, starring Christina Milian.
That's right, who we've talked about before.
Who we've talked about, who was on an amazing track with Hilary Duff, where Santa was a radio DJ.
Oh, wow, what a gift.
Pick it low, pick it up slow. And this movie is all actually about all-star cheerleading, which is like not recreational, but like
rap
extracurricular cheerleading rather than being part of like a high school squad.
Right.
It's like paid for, like competitive dance is paid for rather than being part of
it's the same. It's like rep hockey. It's like rep basketball.
They do a great job in the sense, with maybe the exception of All or Nothing. Like Bring It On is about high school cheerleading. Bring It On Again is about collegiate cheerleading. Bring It On All or Nothing goes back to high school, but it goes into more of a commercial realm because they're not at a sanctioned competition. They're competing be in a music video.
Rihanna vibes.
Bring It On In It to Win It is all about cheer camp and it's high school, but in the summer. Fight to the Finish is, of course, about all-star cheerleading.
Right.
And then in 2017 came the final Bring It On movie, Bring It On Worldwide Cheer Smackdown, which nobody saw because it had very little promotion.
Which
and
nobody saw, and it was in 2017, so
some people don't even know it exists.
I didn't even know it exists right now.
I did see it. I did watch it on Netflix when I was in Charlottetown.
Oh, wow. How was it?
It was good, but it breaks some of the Bring It On tropes. So we haven't talked about this yet. But the most iconic part of the original Bring It On is the opening sequence of I'm sexy, I'm cute, I'm popular to boot.
To boot.
It's iconic. And then, of course, it all ends with her losing her top. And then she wakes up and it was all a dream sequence.
Yeah.
After this, every Bring It On starts off with a dream sequence.
Right, because it's the framing for the movie. And
Bring It On Again starts with her having a failed audition and people throw chili dogs at her. Bring It On All or Nothing starts with her winning prom queen or homecoming queen, and her squad revolts against her, and then they do a pyramid, and then she farts in the pyramid, and then she gets dropped.
No.
Bring It On to Win It. This is all spoilers, by the way. Bring It On In It to Win It.
The first like starts of each movie
off with like a cheer rumble, and then at one point the Sharks bring out their secret weapon, and it's a Freddy Krueger mask.
Oh, or the not drama. Freddy,
but the hockey mask. I don't know which. I don't watch horror films.
Oh, okay,
and he has a chainsaw and like chases
her.
Yeah,
Freddy Krueger.
Okay,
Freddy Krueger.
So then she wakes up, and then
Is that Jason? Maybe Freddy and Jason, one of them. The
It might be
one.
It might be Jason. Yeah. And then Fight to the Finish.
Because Freddy Krueger has a hat, I think.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, Freddy Krueger like, is like the one
has the scary
face. Yeah. And then
I don't know.
I don't know.
Who knows? We don't
Wrong
know.
People to ask this question.
we're not the target demo. We're not sure.
And then Fight to the Finish starts with her running into what she believes is a street gang, and then it turns out no, they're all-star cheerleaders and they're going to cheer against her. And then she wakes up.
That's
and then
terrifying.
Worldwide Cheer Smackdown? Nope.
Doesn't do it. They forgot. They were like, we don't remember what
and
we
it's still
did
Allison
it's
Faust.
Been so many years.
It's still Allison
she
Faust.
She forgot.
She wrote all these dream sequences.
She has amnesia. Yeah.
And it's disgusting. I was very disappointed. But this one does follow the trend of being something about something new. This one's about worldwide cheerleading.
Yes. It's very Bring It On is really bringing on very like RuPaul Drag Race vibes. Like same but different every time.
Same but different.
Speaking of same but different, there's also a musical. There's Bring
Oh my
it
goodness.
On, the musical, which is a musical with music by Tom Kitt and someone I'm sure everyone is well versed in nowadays.
Lin-Emmanuel Miranda.
Miranda. With lyrics by Amanda Green and Lin-Manuel Miranda and book by Jeff Witte. I forgot that Lin wrote this music and I want to laugh.
Well, you know what's interesting is that they did the same thing as they did with the original Bring It On, though, for this one, where they had two separate teams for the two squads. So Tom Kitt and Amanda Green would write all the stuff for the more predominantly white squad, where Lynn would write for the more predominantly multicultural inner city squad.
Well, that's like kind of why I'm sure that's why he was attached to the project, so that they could have someone who could write for the POCs, you know?
You know what? I'm going to say it. I liked this musical. It was fun.
I didn't get involved in it too much. It premiered in 2011 in Georgia, in Atlanta, Georgia. And then it went on a national tour in the U.S. And then also, came to Toronto. And then it premiered on Broadway in 2012 at the St. James. Opening from August till December of that same year. And I remember I went to New York, I believe, that year at some point. And I remember being like, oh, I didn't know that was a musical. And then not having another thought in my brain about it. So that was my engagement with this.
But they kind of dupe you with this musical because all the costuming and promotion makes it really look like it's the original film put into a musical.
Right, and it's story not. It's loosely inspired.
It's just like the sequels. No connections.
No.
It has some... It's actually closer to the third movie because the main character...
I do love that.
The main character goes to the inner city school.
Right.
And like she learns... And she starts a cheer... She starts a squad on... That school doesn't have a squad. They only have a dance team. And she starts a cheerleading team.
And she's like, we can do cheer,
too. We can do cheer. Yeah.
That's so cute. I'm not very familiar with the show. I now want to listen to the music and see what's what.
It's fun.
Because I'm sure it's fun. That's the thing. Like,
actually,
I'm sure
really
bring it on.
Big on Musical.ly, which would eventually turn into TikTok.
That's right.
Hi, my name's Skylar. I rock the Bucks with pride. I'm probably too cool for you, so friend request denied. I'm Skylar from Tyler. Funny. My real name is Inez, but Skylar said to change it, and I do what Skylar says.
Oh, that's funny.
That was like really big on Musical.ly for a while.
I remember
that's
that
from Bring It On, the musical.
I love that.
Truman girls, we're superhuman girls.
Girls, yeah. I think the reason I didn't engage with it too much is because this was the period of time that was very, like, I mean, this happens on Broadway a lot, but, like, every new musical felt like it was based on a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And well, I was just, like, I just couldn't. I got really mad. My, like, grade 12 self was, like, pissed. I was actively mad.
The original.
I was like, no.
So the main character's name is Campbell, and she's played by Taylor Lautermann, who would eventually go on to play... Regina George in Mean Girls on Broadway.
Like, but see, I feel very strongly about Mean Girls on Broadway in that I really enjoy it. But I felt very strongly about this that I didn't want to engage with it, which is very interesting how a few years can change a person. So maybe I should revisit it. I've been on a bit of an accidental Lin-Manuel Miranda kick because I, on the very same day, for the very first time, I watched Encanto, and then I watched also... In the Heights, the movie version. So
we don't talk about Bruno.
So I was just like in it. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, I can't stop listening.
But...
It's very adorable. And it's very like, makes me want to cry every day. All day. So we love to see it.
Can I give you a few more facts about the original film before we head out? All right. So just to start off on a bit of a sad note on some facts, Natanya Reed, who played Janelope, would eventually actually go on to have a car crash in 2012 and would pass away from complications in the car crash. And she would away at age 31. So that's actually really sad.
It is really sad.
R.I.P. Just, you know, she's, to me... Next to Gabrielle Union, she is, like, the most iconic Clover. She has some of the funniest lines.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I just read something else that I forgot to bring up about the Broadway production.
Okay.
In 2011, the screenwriter of the original movie, who we talked about, Jessica Bendinger, sued the show, arguing that she had rights in the licensing of the theater production. She said she would allow the Bring It On musical to proceed if she was properly credited and compensated. And in November of that year, 2011, an out-of-court settlement was made. So
interesting. Well, it is also interesting because the studio allowed the writers to have the name, but they wouldn't let them have the story.
Yes. And so they were probably like, if she won't sue us, or if she sues us, she won't have that much to, you know,
yeah,
make from it, kind of thing. I'm sure built into her movie contract, she probably did have the licensing for the theater production.
Yeah,
which is freaking smart.
Yeah, she should.
Yeah. So, anyways, just wanted to mention that. But sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no worries.
Oh, it also was nominated for lots of Tonys and Drama Desks, won nothing.
Yeah, no.
Actually, it was only nominated for 2 Tonys. It was Best Musical and Best Choreo. Zero. Zilch. Mm-hmm. Nada. And that's fine.
And here, so the most of my facts are from Insider. Once again, giving credit where credit is due. So in the, so there's that famous audition moment in it where it's so funny. It's all like the bad auditions. I love the ballet dancer. And then the, I believe Jan is like intrigued by him. It's so funny. And then there's there's also the Broadway guy when he's like, give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to hair. And they're like, what's with the show tunes? Isn't this the audition for Pippin? No. It's so...
That kid is us. That kid is us.
They have the striptease scene. The one girl does a striptease.
Oh, that's right.
It cost the producers $40,000 to license that song in the film. To license Cherry Pie.
Stop.
She's my cherry pie. Not Sherry Pie. She's canceled, but...
Oh, God. No. Oh, my God. I didn't realize it was that much money. But it is also like... iconically that era, like that kind of song, like in slow-mo, like, you mm-hmm. know.
Well, see, I watched the behind the scenes the director's commentary. It was the deleted scenes, and they said that they were going to show the whole scene, but they had to put in other music behind it because they couldn't pay the $40,000 again for the DVD rights.
Yeah, they're like, no, we've done it enough.
No. So in the deleted scene, you don't get the full song.
You don't get the cherry pie.
Mm-hmm.
You can just play it on your phone next to it.
You can just play it on your phone. Yeah, I think they said that like just mute it if you have the song, play it, because of course it was at the time of CDs.
CDs. Oh God.
The film was also originally entitled Cheer Fever.
Ew.
Was its working title.
Awful working title. Thank God, because Bring It On is iconic.
So Benninger would go on to write Stick It, Aquamarine, and episodes of Sex and the City.
Wow, half of that is iconic. Aquamarine and Sex and the City, both iconic.
Really? I love Stick It.
Not iconic. This is the part of the show where Carly starts calling things iconic and says what is and what isn't.
Kirsten Dunst was only 17 at filming.
Iconic.
And many of the cast members, including Eliza Dushku and Jesse Bradford, and I don't know if she was... Okay, they would go down a lot of the not behind the scenes, the background cheerleaders, not background, but the professional cheerleaders.
Yeah, cheerleaders.
They became all friends on set and during the 4-week cheer camp, and they would drive down on their weekends to Tijuana and drink on the beach.
That's iconic.
Gabrielle Union would be a part of this group too. And one time they went down and got arrested for publicly drinking on the beach. And there's a dispute between the producers and Eliza Dushku. The producers say that they bailed them out. And Eliza's like, you didn't bail us out. We didn't. I was a good negotiator. I got us out of jail.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So they were never convicted of anything. But
no.
Yeah.
They're just being young and fun.
What young and dumb and fun.
Our tagline.
The whole dream sequence opening was almost cut from the opening. So we almost didn't have that iconic framing. Sexy, I'm cute.
I'm popular to boot. I'm glad that we do. What a gift.
Oh, we never talked about the iconic toothbrushing scene.
That's true. Let's chat about it.
It is just the best meet. It's not really a meet cute, but it's very much the meet cute moment of the film.
Totally.
And it's funny in interviews, the actors were saying on paper, it was they brushed their teeth and they just had such great chemistry that they filmed them a few times, and it was so iconic that Ariana Grande recreated it in her Thank You Next music video.
That's so true.
Thank you. Next.
So cute.
Sarah cute. Trying to think, was there any other fun facts that I had. I'm just looking at my notes.
Yeah, I've said all I needed to say, except I'll say it one more time. Iconic.
Oh, Kirsten Dunst believes that Torrance is the character that is closest to her, and the writers wrote Torrance with Gwen Stefani in mind. Oh, not like not for the character, but like she was like the inspiration for the character.
Yeah, like the vibe they were going for.
Yeah, the vibe they were going for. Oh, and I did have one more thing to say about casting, that Kirsten Dunst was not actually the original Torrance. Like, she was not the first person cast.
I love that.
Yeah, Marley Shelton was actually originally cast as Torrance, and she turned the role down to do Sugar Spice and Semi-Automatics.
Yes,
which is also a cheerleading movie.
Yeah.
And actually, Gabrielle Union was in talks to be part of that movie too, but then turned it down to be a part of Bring It On.
Iconic.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing about, like, as an actor, as talent, you're just gonna try your best to take what you like. You're never gonna know what's gonna be good.
So,
like, you're never gonna know what's gonna be a
if
hit.
You are an actor that's out there and good. Are a second pick for something, just know Kirsten Dunst was not the original Torrance Shipman.
That's right. We love talking about second picks on this podcast.
Yeah.
As long as you're in the room at the end of the day, that's what counts.
And actually, she turned her down a few times before accepting the role. So
drama.
So
oh, they, but she's wonderful.
They had to adjust a lot of the scheduling around the film because they wanted to do night scenes for the football game. Only 17, so she only had a limited amount of hours she could work. So they had to film other stuff during the day so that they could have her at night.
Dang, that's cute and fun. Child labor laws. We love to keep our children safe.
Keeping our children safe. Yes. All right. Well, I think that brings us back.
That's right.
We kind of jumped all over the place, but I hope you still enjoyed, audience members.
Yeah, we had lots to say.
Come up with a name for our audience. For our listeners.
I feel like they need to come up with their own name. I don't think we can give that to them.
The hashtags.
Eric doesn't agree with me. Eric wants to name you.
I want to name you. It's my job. I
can see it in your eyes.
Carly said it and I was like, really, Carly?
Eric's like, you're going to leave it up to them? I was like, I guess not.
Oh, goodness.
If you let me, I will, but I guess not.
Oh, my goodness, Carly. Do you have any pop picks?
I sure do, Eric. My pop pick of the week. It's going to be in the Heights.
In the Heights.
I thought it was very well done. I thought it was very
It's beautiful.
Sweet. It's gorgeous. Everyone is, like, beautiful and sings beautifully. And, like, I was never I wasn't an In the Heights hater, but I wasn't an In the Heights obsessed either.
Yeah.
But after seeing the film, I was like, it's just so sweet. And it is everything I love about what theater and film can do. Mm-hmm. I love multi-generational stories. It's New York, which is my favorite. Like, for me, and it has, like, people of color all over. Was there a lot of things that it could have done better? Yes.
Yeah.
As we all know in the media. But was it great?
Yeah, I think we talked
Absolutely.
About that earlier.
Yeah, we talked about
year.
It a little. But yeah, I would say In the Heights, I just thought it was swell. I thought it was so sweet and swell. I cried. I laughed.
It was better than
I
Cats.
Had many feelings. It was way better than Cats. It was probably one of the best modern movie musicals I've seen in a long time, which is high praise.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a bit of a Debbie Downer sometimes. I have high expectations. Wah, wah. Wah, wah. I have high expectations, and I just need them to be met. And it was
nothing wrong with having high standards.
That's right. It took me a while to watch it because I was like, oh, am I going to like this? Everyone liked it, but will I like it? No, I liked it. And you will like it too. So that's my two cents. Eric, what's your pop pick of the week or pop picks of the week, my pal?
Well, I kind of already said it, but one of my pop picks is definitely the inspiration for this podcast, which was me watching the second season of Cheer.
Love
Go
it.
Watch it. What I liked about it is that they didn't shy away from some of the tougher aspects of how fame has affected these kids.
That's awesome.
And of course, one of the members of the Navarro squad gets accused and is in jail currently for child pornography
and
soliciting sex from minors. I not that I enjoyed that, that's not the right words, but I appreciated that they didn't shy away from that. And they sort of do it in real time. Like, he's part of the squad for a while, and then it's like it happens, and they're like,
and then he's not.
Then he's not. And
great.
Yeah. And it's something
they could have swept under the rug, but they dealt with it.
It's also really interesting because they expanded the show, because originally it's just about Navarro, but this year they also have their rival squad, Trinity Valley. So it's it's full, like, bring it on.
Yeah.
They don't talk between the two squads, but it is interesting. And there's sort of a rivalry between the two choreographers of the squads.
Ooh. We do love a little bit of rivalry.
But I'm not going to make that my proper pop pick, because I feel like that's too on the nose for this pod. Mm. What I have been doing to entertain myself in the semi-lockdown is I've been playing a game called Planet Coaster. So I was getting really into watching videos of Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Oh my god.
Which
iconic.
Which
we can, yeah, definitely dive into one day. Iconic.
And here's like a little mini before there were hashtags. At one point, like, the producers of Roller Coaster Tycoon, like, they kind of split. Like, the distributor and, like, the actual development company. Like, the distributor has the license to the name, but what made the game good was the developer. So the developer developed Planet Coaster.
Oh,
so cool. It's basically the actual sequel to Roller Coaster Tycoon, opposed to the legitimate sequels to Roller Coaster, which panned and people do not like them.
Yeah, nobody likes it. Yeah.
So go check out Planet Coaster if you're looking for a simulator game. It's like fun, sandbox. Open world, not open world, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's really
fun.
It's not a RPG.
Yes, that's cool. Gaming things.
Gaming. I'm like talking like my brother.
Gamer. I also wanted to tack one more pop pick onto mine. In Canada.
One pop pick per episode. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh. No, you can't start that now. I'm a Libra. I can't choose. Yeah, I'm going to say Encanto. Also, I'm getting on that train. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone's been watching it.
But we don't talk about Bruno.
We don't talk about Bruno, but we talk about Encanto. It is absolutely excellent. And it's very nice. I can't believe it's taken Disney 60 movies to give us, you know, a relatable family dynamic of beautiful Latinx Colombian folks, and it's lovely, and it's very sweet and sad and all the feelings, and relatable, so overly relatable.
I haven't seen it yet, but I will. Is she in running to become a Disney princess, or is there no princess?
So I don't think she's a prince. She's not a princess, because she's just part of a regular family. They're special. This family's special, but she's just a person who lives in this town.
We do need a Latinx princess.
Yeah. Yeah. She's voiced by iconic Stephanie Beatrice. She's from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah. And In the Heights.
In the Heights. Yeah. So I've been on a bit of a kick there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie Beatrice. I don't know how to say your last name. I think that's right. Yeah, I was right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beatrice? I don't know. Beatrice? I should probably learn how to say your last name, because I love her. I think she's very funny. She's excellent in Nine-Nine when I used to watch that, and she's can sing, and she's cute and fun, and who doesn't love that? So
Stephanie, who plays Rosa Diaz.
Yeah. Yeah, Nine-Nine. She has the Yeah, she plays Rosa Diaz in Nine-Nine, and in the Heights, she has like the iconic.
She plays Carla. My dad is Dominican Cuban. Exactly. My mom is from PR in Chile, which means I'm Cuban Dominican Rican. But I always say I'm from Queens.
Yeah, the like iconic, you know, bit from that.
That's another. Sorry, going a little bit back to comparing In the Heights and Bring It On for a second.
Yeah, sure.
You know how in the Heights from the stage adaptation they added a third hairdresser? That's how I feel about what they probably did with the three girls from Black and added them to the Clovers. Like, they just kind of were like, we'll put the third one in and we'll just give her some of the other characters' lines.
Yeah, we'll just put her here and it'll be fine.
Yeah. That's like my one gripe with both In the Heights and
Bring It On. Just adding like an extra person, just to, because on film it looks nicer if there's three.
Oh, I had one good interesting fact and I didn't say it.
Say it now.
Okay. Gabrielle Union on TikTok exposed the producers that would bring it on. Because iconic. This is big. So if you watch the trailer of Bring It On, you'll see scenes that are not in the movie of the Clovers.
Sure.
They're like in brightly colored tank tops and stuff. It's not in the movie. And they filmed that after the movie was done, after test audience had seen the movie. And they filmed those because test audiences said they really liked the Clovers. So they filmed that to put it in the trailer to make it so that more audiences of color would want to come see the film, even though those scenes are not in the movie.
Yeah, they were like, we want to have something to show.
There just wasn't enough scenes of them. So they're like, we'll just make fake ones.
Wow. That's shady business.
Some shady business. That's some shady business. So as progressive,
and it shows that representation matters and shady business. But so, wow.
Yeah.
I love that she exposed them on TikTok.
That's so progressive exciting. As this movie could be.
It absolutely was.
It still had some issues.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, that's been us today.
Thank you so much for coming and listening to our first episode of 2022. Because I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 2022.
Oh, come on, Tay. Love Tay. All right, Tay.
All right, Tay. Bye.